today's scripture is from Acts 4, verses 32 through 37. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's grace was so powerfully at work in them all that there were no needy persons among them. From time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone who had need. Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means son of encouragement, sold a field he owned and brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet.
So each summer, I take some time away from preaching so that I can take some vacation time with my family and do some study and prep work for the next ministry year, which will start at the end of August. So just so you all know, I won't be preaching the next 5 weeks. We have some wonderful preachers that are going to be here with us. We have Matt Beatty, who's a pastor of the downtown campus of Crossway up in Nashua. Paul Travers is going to preach a couple times. Cricket LaMica will be preaching. And then a friend of mine from a preaching cohort I've been a part of, Brett Olson, will be preaching. And we'll be going through a series on the book of Psalms. So just FYI, I'll be around but not around for the next few, for the next month. Over the past 8 weeks, though, we have been talking about our value of giving freely. We say every Sunday that Harbor of Hope exists to help people find their way back to God, and we do that by living fully in worship, loving deeply in community, and giving freely in service. This school year, we've been celebrating the 25th year of our community here at Harbor. So we've been sort of taking a deep dive through each of our key values of living fully, loving deeply, and giving freely. As we've looked at what it means to give freely, we've talked about how we can only give freely, we can only give generously when we know that God will provide for us, that he is a good shepherd who gives us everything we need. We've said that we give because we understand that nothing we have actually belongs to us. We give freely because generosity is a part of the character and calling of God's people as we imitate him, right? We give freely because other people are in need. We give freely of whatever we have, knowing that even when we feel like we have very little, there is something we have that someone in our community needs. We have a part to play. And we talked last week about how we give freely because hoarding our wealth is bad for us. It steals our affections. It keeps us caught in a trap like the raccoon in the book Where the Red Fern Grows, who just can't let go of the shiny object and get out of the trap. And today, as we wrap up this series, as we wrap up another year of ministry here at Harbor, I want to talk about the result of our generosity, the result of our giving freely. Because not only do we give because God has been generous to us, not only do we give because it's just what God's people do, not only do we give because we understand that what we have isn't really ours, we give because it is one of the most powerful tools in our mission to help people find their way back to God. It is one of our most powerful tools. Generosity is attractive. Generosity sets us apart. Generosity is a stark contrast from the way the world tends to go. Generosity is a way we help people find their way back to God. That's what happened in the book of Acts. And it's exactly what I see happening all the time here at Harbor. One reason generosity is such a powerful tool to help people find their way back to God is that we live in a time where people are experiencing a lot of anxiety. And that was true of Jerusalem in the time of Acts 4 as well. The early Christians here in Acts 4 lived in Jerusalem. They lived in a part of their country where things were just more expensive. Jerusalem was seen as an important place to be. Jerusalem, was the center of the political power. The temple was there, so it was the center of religious power. But because it was a big city, things cost more. Fruit could be like 3 to 6 times more expensive in the city than in the country. And because sellers knew that people coming to the temple needed doves to sacrifice in the temple, the reason they came to the city, doves in the city of Jerusalem could be as much as 100 times more expensive as they were out in the country. Things cost more in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was also geographically a place where resources were limited. Water was scarce. The arid ground made growing crops difficult. So in times of emergency, things would be especially difficult in Jerusalem. Food became even more expensive. Clothing materials would multiply many times in cost. At the same time, there was a lot of political unrest. There was a lot of division even within the people of God about how to deal with the political problems of the day. The people were heavily taxed. King Herod lived in lavish luxury while the people struggled day to day. Jerusalem was in a difficult economic situation. I just wonder, as you listened to the situation in Jerusalem, if there's anything at all that resonates just like a little bit with where we are today, where we are in New England, right? Like the early church in Jerusalem, we live in a part of the country where things are more expensive. It's awesome here. There's so much beautiful, amazing stuff here, but it's expensive. The cost of living tends to outpace people's salaries, and so people that are in middle and lower classes can't even afford to live in the same place where they work. Right? We've been as a country in a season of economic crisis that was compounded by COVID and is still making waves in our country. Housing costs are out of control. The price of groceries is insane. And on top of that, there's political division and unrest. We all know things are difficult, but we have wildly different ideas as to the reasons for and solutions to the problems. You know, as increased numbers of wildfires, hurricanes, damaging storms strike, we're vulnerable to increased cost of managing life in this sort of unpredictable world. People in Jerusalem were anxious about what was happening around them. People in our cities and neighborhoods and jobs are anxious about what's happening around them. People in Jerusalem were wondering how they would survive. People in our cities and neighborhoods and jobs and church are wondering how they will survive. And into this mess of anxiety and fear and scarcity enters the church. In Acts 2, and again here in Acts 4, Luke, who's the author of the book of Acts, he describes the activity of the early church in this time of political and economic anxiety. This is what he says. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's grace was so powerful in them all that there were no needy persons among them. From time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone who had need. In the midst of economic anxiety, in the midst of political unrest, the early church took what Jesus said seriously. The early church knew that participating in God's kingdom meant to love God and each other. They showed that they believed what Jesus said about not clinging to earthly treasure, about not hoarding up treasure on earth, but by giving to those who were in need. They demonstrated that they believed what Jesus said about how their love for each other would be the very thing that would show the world that they belonged to him. So when some in the early church were suffering or in need, the others looked around and asked, "How can we help?" They didn't consider anything they had as their own, but they looked at everything they had as a resource to help others. Luke says every once in a while, people even sold plots of land or their second home to give the money to the church to help those who were in need. It was a wild time. Now, this was not some sort of cult type thing where people were like forced to surrender everything they had or risk being ostracized, right? This was not a mandatory entrance requirement where people's possessions were confiscated by the disciples and they lost all autonomy and private property, right? That's not what was happening there. What was happening was a voluntary generosity that marked people who were so changed by the love of God that they chose freely and without being coerced to share what they had, to believe that they were part of the new thing God wanted to do. They surrendered themselves freely to participate in God's project of restoring the world. It was amazing. It was like nothing the ancient world had seen. There were no needy people among them. Everyone had what they needed. In a time of economic insecurity in the church, everyone had what they needed. And because of how remarkable, how different, how attractive this community was, I think it's not an accident that in the middle of Luke's description of the church's generosity in Acts 4, he includes this sentence. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. Listen, I do not think, as some biblical scholars have wondered, that this sentence is just some editor later dropping in kind of a non sequitur. Yeah, they were sharing, but they also talked about Jesus. I don't think that's what's going on there. I think Luke is demonstrating that for the people of God, our generosity is tied closely with our effectiveness at helping people find their way back to God. I think this is Luke telling us that that demonstrating generosity, that being generous with each other, sharing all we have in love, is what gives our witness credibility as followers of Jesus. Generosity is what causes the world around us to wonder about the God we worship. Generosity is what attracts people to the community of Christ followers who can then introduce them to Jesus. Luke is telling us that the early church, in a time of great anxiety and uncertainty, generosity was one of the most impactful ways that the church grew. They cared for each other. They cared for the poor. They cared for orphans. They cared for widows. They cared for outcasts. They cared for immigrants. And people noticed. There's a great little nugget from Emperor Julian, who was the Roman emperor in the 300s. He was commenting on the difference between Christians and some of his people that he'd put in charge of various areas in his empire. He was basically annoyed that the Christians looked better than his people. He says, "For it is disgraceful that when no Jew ever has to beg, and the impious Galileans," that's the Christians, "support not only their own poor, but ours as well. All men see our people lack aid from us." He's annoyed that the church is doing such a good job taking care of people because it's making him look bad. I think it's an undisputed fact that the generosity of the early church, the way the early church cared for not only their own but others around them, was a key factor in the spread of Christianity. And Luke tells us about how the church was growing because of the generosity of the community. And after he tells us about that, he introduces us to someone who's going to play a big role in the growth of the church, a Jewish man from Cyprus named Joseph, who's better known by his nickname, Barnabas. Barnabas means son of encouragement. Barnabas is going to go on to play an important role as an encourager, a peacemaker, and a leader in the early church. But the first thing Luke wants us to know about him is that he's so generous. Luke is demonstrating how the generosity of the early church helped more people find their way back to God. And then he introduces Barnabas as like, exhibit A. See this guy Barnabas? He's going to be really important in the early church. And not only was he, you know, great evangelist, all that stuff, but he was generous. He helped so many people find their way back to God. And Harvard, can I tell you, when I think of exhibit A, Barnabas, I think I could add another 125 exhibits from what I see here at Harper. You know, as we've talked through this series of generosity and wealth and resources, I know all of us, me included, all of us have felt convicted sometimes about where we still have room to grow in our relationship with our stuff. We all need God's help, right, to be more and more intent on seeking his kingdom and less focused on just accumulating security and comfort for ourselves. We all have room to grow, right? This is a lifelong journey we're all on. But Harbor, we're not starting at zero. We're not starting with nothing here on this journey. This is a community of generosity. This is a place where generosity has led more and more people to find their way back to God. If exhibit A would be Barnabas, then let me suggest exhibit B. Exhibit B, our elder team. Today we're going to commission John Hughes, Paul Travers, Abby Rendish, Donna Kincaid, Josh Malinsky, and Katie Longo as our elders for this next year. These six men and women of God. Yeah. They give so much of their time and energy around here. They already carry the burden of leadership. Their goal is to stay true to God's vision and desires for our church. On top of serving as elders, they also serve elsewhere in kids or student ministry and worship ministry on the tech team. These people love our church and give constantly and generously for free of their time and talent. They share their resources to help this church flourish. So exhibit B might be our elders. Exhibit C, can I talk about our staff? Kate Brulé, yeah, like let's clap for all these people. Our staff team, Kate Brulé, our worship director, works 10 hours a week here, and she has two small kids at home. And every week, she is facilitating everything it takes for us to gather and worship together on Sundays. Katie Smolinski, our communications director, she makes sure we all know what's going on around here, all while making it look really good. Judy Adamic, let's talk about Judy. She's our bookkeeper. She moved to Minnesota 2 years ago, and she's still serving our community here. Exhibit C is our staff. Exhibit D, let's talk about our ministry directors, okay? As volunteers, Abby Rendish runs our family ministry. Bob Jeffers takes care of all the operational things that need to happen to maintain an organization. Colleen McGrath and Megan Hughes are our co-outreach directors. Luann and Rosemary, who do connections for us. Pam, who does Harbor Women's. Sherry, who is in charge of our journey groups. These men and women are volunteers. They do not get paid to recruit volunteers, plan lesson and events for kids and students, manage the facility, send us out to serve in our community and in the Dominican Republic, make sure this place is a welcoming environment every Sunday, give women places to connect. Everything they do is volunteer time, and my goodness, has it helped you find your way back to God. Exhibit E. The rest of you. those of you who serve on volunteer teams here at Harbor, you make coffee, you put out signs so people can find us in this crazy mill complex. You set up the slides so we can participate together in worship. You teach in kids and student classrooms. You serve at the Wish Project. You make sure people feel welcome with a smile as they walk in. You send cards to encourage us. You host our online services so that people who physically can't be with us can still connect. Harbor of Hope family, your generosity is indisputably helping people find their way back to God. You're doing it. And I know more. I know story after story of the ways you have been generous to me, ways you have been generous to each other. I know that your generosity to each other has made people feel loved and welcomed here as they start their journeys with Jesus and they keep walking with him through difficult seasons. Your generosity is making a difference. Your generosity is helping people find their way back to God. As we wrap up this series, as we close out this celebratory year of 25 years of God's goodness, I want to do something we don't usually do here and give you all a few minutes to share how you've been encouraged by someone's generosity here at Harbor. So here's the deal. I have a microphone up here. You could come up right here and you could share a story of how maybe an individual person, maybe just the community as a whole, how you've been encouraged by the generosity of this place. If getting up in front of a room full of people is not really your thing, I also have thank you cards at the tables that you could take and just write a thank you card to somebody else here at Harbor for how they've shown you generosity and made you feel loved and welcomed. So I want to invite up, if anybody wants to, I'll bring this mic out, and let's hear some stories of how we have experienced God's generosity and love through each other here at Harbor.
Okay. Hi. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Trish Maley. And back in the spring, between March and May, I was very ill. And this community, this very generous community, was amazing to me. And I just wanted to say some of the things that they did. There was a meal train set up by some wonderful women in this church. There were 12 women that visited me at home every couple of days and brought me a meal. And not only did they bring me a meal, but they catered it to the diet that I was on. I received numerous texts, phone calls, received cards, visitors, and the visitors that came to spend time with me weren't just there for 5 minutes. They spent quite a bit of time with me, and they prayed with me, and they prayed over me. I received donations. I received gift cards, market basket gift cards, so that I could get the type of food I needed. I was very, very overwhelmed, and I'm still overwhelmed. I could not believe, I mean, I knew that I've been part of a wonderful community for 9 years, but I had no idea the depth of the love that you people have inside for each other and for me. So thank you.
All right, I should have taken her offer to go first. Never do that again. And when Katie first said that, I thought, how do you thank one person here? Because everybody's, and basically you're doing that. There's so many people like, how can I help? How can I help? And at any time, like, hey, you, oh, can you help this? And even if you're matching up two people, we don't know what we're doing, but we just know we want to try. So I'm not even going to use any specific names. I'm just going to say, I love how people will do that. And please never be intimidated if I'm the one that says, hey, you, can you go help him? Just tell me, oh, no, that's not my gift, and move on to the next person, which I will promptly do.
There's two I have to follow up after. I've found this church to be very generous in many ways, but most recently, I just came back from a trip to Rwanda, Africa, and I would not have been able to go if it wasn't for the generosity of Carla Quiros, which I don't think she's even here, but she gave up her time and money to come on a trip to Africa where she knew no one except for me, and the trip was just amazing, and I couldn't have done it without her because I wouldn't have had the courage to go, so... I just love the people here. I went to attend the wedding of a boy I used to sponsor. So, Imanashimwe means praise God in Kinyarwandan. So, thank you, everyone.
Wow, the many ways that we've heard so far that God has blessed us. So, when I first came here to this church some 9 years ago, maybe, time blurs, you know, especially when you get a little bit older, like I am now. But anyway, when I first came here, I think the second year, my wife Joyce and myself got pretty sick. So sick, we almost were hospitalized. It wasn't COVID, but whatever it was, just had it flat on our backs. And we didn't even ask for it, but the people in the church noticed. Where's Tom and Joyce? So they kind of reached out to us. In a similar manner, they brought us meals. They bought us gift cards, Market Basket. They even did some shopping for us at Market Basket. So we had all the provisions there for us, and they sustained us during that time. And even though it was a while ago, it still resounds with us, and we are grateful. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Perry. My wife and I, Celine, we moved from Toronto, Canada to this area a couple months ago, and we're expecting twins. So, thank you. It was a very big move, and we moved here. We didn't know anyone in the state. So we found this church, and the generosity and the kindness and the love has been amazing. The church organized a baby shower for Celine, and it was beautiful. Like, I really appreciated it. I love it. I want to be a part of this community and help out any way I can, provide my services, my knowledge. For sure. I'm always available for any kind of help. If anyone needs anything, I'm open. So I'm really thankful. And I love everyone here. And thank you for the kindness and the love.
I'm part of the CARD team, and I just wanted to give a shout out for the people in this congregation that write cards to people to encourage them, et cetera. Most of you probably don't know this, but I now have several people who make their own cards. Everyone buys their own cards. People supply their own stamps, and for all of you, it's going up to 89 cents a card now, but the generosity there is just amazing. So just a big shout out for that. Also, if you've been coming from the congregation for a long time and you've never gotten a card, my apologies, please take the connection card and put your address on there, because quite often I don't have those. So thank you to everyone that shares your time and your encouragement to build each other builds each other up in this congregation. Thanks.
So I've been coming to Harbor for like 13 years or so. I've been here for a long time. And for me, what I love most about Harbor is when I went through some really crazy, we all go through things in life, but I had some pretty traumatic events. And what I love most about this community is that I knew I could reach out and get the emotional support and the love that I really needed through some big losses in my life. And I remember a women's retreat 2018, like my life changed after that. That was when I met you, Trish. I was on my way to the retreat and had just lost my little sister, and I almost took my life before going, and I still got to keep going. And I drove, where was it, in Connecticut or something? That was really far away. So I was on the road, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking about it, and I was like, God kept telling me, just keep driving, don't stop. And I got there, and I really experienced God's love and his voice. And the women's harbor team, those ladies like saved my life that weekend. I don't think they know that, but everything is good now. But I just want to say thank you for the love and the support and the culture and acceptance that this church has. And I love you all so much.
There were a lot of people among us, a lot of wonderful, sharing, loving people who prayed for me for the 2 years that I was ill, from 2021 to 2023. I could tell, even though I was not in my own capacities mentally, I had a serious mental illness, even though I wasn't together, I knew in my heart that people were praying for me. Even though I didn't feel particularly close to God right then because of my illness, I knew they were, and I knew they were praying for me. I could feel it. As far and distant as I felt from anybody, anything, God, the whole works, I know people were praying for me. I've always felt strongly about prayer, and that really just intensified the value of prayer to me. So I'm very thankful for the people that saw me through in prayer and brought me through to victory. Thank you.
If you're sitting here and you're like, man, I could really use that, come tell us, please. That's another thing, like, the cards are good for. And actually, in the next month or so, we're going to actually put up a community care wall here at Harbor. I don't have it ready for today. I wanted to, but we're going to put up a community care wall where there'll be a bulletin board, basically, where you can say, I have or I need, and we can share with each other that way. But today, if you're here and you have a need, we want to know. Tell me. You're going to see all of our elders in just a minute. Tell them. We want to help. It's a joy for us to help, right? You know, when you've shared with somebody, it is a joy to help somebody. So please let us come alongside you if you're in a season like this. So I want to do this all day, and I am so, family, I'm so proud of this church community. Listen, I know we are in a hard season where all the stuff happening out there sometimes makes it hard for us to love each other in here. I know that. But we're going to keep fighting for each other. We're going to keep being generous with each other. We're going to keep loving each other. We're going to keep praying together. We're going to keep seeking Jesus together. That's the only way the church stays united in a season when the world is fracturing. What we just talked about right here, all these stories, and I know there's more. That's how we stay united as a church. That's how we guard our unity. And that is what shows the world that there must be something to this Jesus thing, right? We're going to take communion now. Jesus is the source of our unity. Jesus is the source of this community. This community cannot happen. People as different as us can't love each other and serve each other without Jesus. So I want to invite, whenever you're ready, to come and partake of the juice and the bread and celebrate that Jesus on the cross killed whatever division might have existed before and made us one body. So come when you're ready. Communion here at Harbor is for everybody who wants Jesus. So come on up and take communion. Mm-hmm.